Welcome to Antioch. We are a multi-generational, justice-minded church in beautiful Bend, Oregon, seeking and celebrating the reconciliation of all things. May the Word of God turn your heart toward Christ and the world He loves.
As we move from gathering to listening, our scripture reading today is from the first book of Samuel, chapter 9, verses 1 to 10. Now there was a Benjamite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, son of Zeror, the son of Becharot, the son of Ephiah of Benjamin. And Kish had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel. And he was a head taller than anyone else. Now the donkeys, come on, I gotta get a hee-haw out of this. Now the donkeys belonging to Saul's father Kish were lost. And Kish said to his son Saul, "Take one of the servants with you and go and look for the donkeys." So he passed through the hill country of Ephraim and through the area around Shalisha, but they did not find them. They went on into the district of Sha'alim, but the donkeys were not there. And then he passed through the territory of Benjamin, but they did not find them. When they reached the district of Zuph, Saul said to the servant who was with him, "Come, let's go back, or my father will stop thinking about the donkeys and start worrying about us." But the servant replied, "Look, in this town there is a man of God, and he is highly respected, and everything he says comes true. Let's go there now. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take." And Saul said to his servants, "If we go, what can we give the man? The food in our sacks is gone. We have no gift to take to the man of God. What do we have?" The servant answered him again. "Look," he said, "I have a quarter of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man of God so that he will tell us what way to take." Now, formerly in Israel, if someone went to inquire of God, they would say, "Come, let us go to the seer," because the prophet of today used to be called a seer. "Good," Saul said to the servant. "Come, let's go." So they set out for the town where the man of God was. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Dan. Morning, church. Great to see you all today. So glad that you're with us. This summer, as you know, we are walking through the Old Testament books of 1 and 2 Samuel, and we're studying the history of this specific nation that God chose to be his people in the world. So starting way back with an elderly couple named Abraham and Sarah, God had chosen the Israelites to be the ones through whom he would bring his salvation to the world. And the deal that God had always had with the Israelites was that he would be their God and they would be his people. That he would bless them, not just so that they could be blessed, but so that they in turn could be a blessing to all the nations on earth. Speaking of all the nations on earth, how many of you have been enjoying the World Cup this year? Yeah, pretty fun. Jen and I have been getting into it. She's Canadian, so we were a little bummed when they lost yesterday. But to be honest, I've never been a huge soccer fan. I love watching my kids play. But when the World Cup started, I was like, I think it's just a big socialist kickball tournament. And but the truth is, it's been really amazing, especially watching all people from all nations on earth come together. And I think anytime you see something like that, we're getting a sign that points to the kingdom of God. It's a beautiful thing. And so that's what the Israelites were supposed to be. But as we've walked through their story in 1 Samuel, we've seen that they're not doing a great job at it. Instead of living lives set apart as the people of God, they keep following the ways of the world. And so not only have they failed to be a blessing to the nations, they've actually become an oppressor of the nations. In fact, they're oppressing their own nation. And so what they decide is that they need a king. Like all the other nations around them have kings, but they've never had one. And so they go to their leader, this priest named Samuel. They tell him that they want a king so that they can be like all the other nations. And Samuel reminds them that they're not supposed to be like all the other nations. They're supposed to look different because God himself is their ruler. And they say, that's great, but we still want a human king. We want someone who will lead our government and build up our military and grow our economy. And so that's where we left things off last week. God tells Samuel, all right, if the people want a king, then give them a king. If they think putting the right guy in office is going to save them, then let's let them try and find out. And so God agrees to give the people what they want. And he chooses this man named Saul to be the first king of Israel. And so we first meet Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 9, if you want to turn there. And in verse 2, we're told that there's a prominent, wealthy man in the community named Kish, and he had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel. He was a head taller than anyone else. Okay, so when we're introduced to the character of Saul, we're basically told three things about him: that he's rich, handsome, and tall. And that's really all that we know, but that's okay, because that's all the Israelites need to know in order to want him as their king. They don't want some small, weak, no-name guy. They want someone who can stand up and stand out among all the kings on earth. And so God gives them what they want. And Saul gets the job, not because of his wisdom or character or integrity or work ethic. It's because he's got the money, he's got the body, and he's got the looks. That's how he gets the job. And I know what you're saying, Pete, isn't that how you got your job too? And I get it. I'm sure it looks that way. But I'd like to think I'm more than just that. So Israel gets this king who looks really impressive from a distance. But then when we get our first up-close look at him, he's a little bit less impressive. And so as we've already learned, what's Saul doing when we first meet him in 1 Samuel? Well, he's wandering through the hills trying to find Daisy and the rest of her donkey friends. You don't need to do the thing, all right? So verse 3 says, now the donkeys belonging to Saul's family Kish, Saul's father Kish, were lost. And Kish said to his son Saul, take one of the servants with you and go look for the donkeys. So the reason Kish tells Saul to go look for the donkeys is most likely because it was Saul's job to look after them. And we all know that donkeys are known for being stubborn, but they aren't exactly known for running off and getting lost. So you have to be a pretty bad donkey herder to lose your herd of donkeys. But the donkeys are lost, and Saul really needs to find them because these donkeys were really valuable assets, if you'll pardon the pun. So, and the thing is, it's not like he just can't remember if he left them in this field or that field. Verse 4 tells us that he passed through all these different lands, Ephraim and Shalishah, and he went to the district of Shalim. He passed through Benjamin. He couldn't find them anywhere. And so the idea is that he's going from one place to another, and he's traveling a long way and covering a lot of land, which means he has no idea where these donkeys are. Be like if I said I lost my keys, they could be anywhere. Maybe they're on my desk, or they could be in Idaho or Germany or something. I have no idea. They're just gone. And so Saul's donkeys are lost. He's looking everywhere. He can't find them anywhere. And this is the guy who God chooses to be the first king of Israel. They said they wanted a king, so God gives them what they want. Do you think maybe God's trying to teach them something here? Because what kind of king does Israel really need? Well, all through the story this far, The primary metaphor has been that the people of Israel are like a flock of sheep. And so what they need for a king is a shepherd. But what they get instead is a donkey herder, and a pretty bad one at that. So what's God saying to them? He's saying, you're supposed to have a shepherd because you're supposed to be my sheep. But instead, I'm giving you a donkey herder because you're acting like a bunch of donkeys. So here's the picture. Saul is a king looking for a bunch of lost donkeys, and the Israelites are a bunch of lost donkeys looking for a king. And they're so lost that instead of choosing a king who is good and humble and wise, they choose a king just because he's tall, handsome, and rich. Saul's name even tells us this. Names are a big deal in the Bible. The name Saul means desired or asked for. And so Saul is literally the king they asked for. The problem is, he's not the king they need. See, back in verse 2, where it says Saul was a handsome young man, the word handsome means good-looking, pleasing to the eye. We know that. But this word shows up way back at the beginning of the story. Except it wasn't talking about a man. It was talking about a tree. Genesis 3:6 says, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. And she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. So do you see what's happening here? Apparently, there's a connection between King Saul, this rich, tall, handsome man who's good-looking, stands head and shoulders above everyone else, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which was the one tree in the garden that God told the first man and woman not to eat from. But because it looked so good and was so pleasing to the eye and so desirable, they chose to disobey God and do it anyway. And so by eating of that tree, they weren't just breaking God's rules. Rather, they were saying, instead of trusting what God has declared to be good and evil, right and wrong, wise and unwise, we are going to decide for ourselves. That was their declaration of independence from God. That we will no longer live under your rule and reign, but we want to run our own lives. And so, rather than trusting what God had declared to be good and evil, they decided they were going to make that decision for themselves. They rejected what was right in God's eyes, and did what was right in their own. How does that go? Well, we know in the story, that's when all hell breaks loose and the world falls apart. And it all started with seeing something that looked desirable and attractive and pleasing to the eye, and choosing what looked good over what actually was good. And of course, the story of Adam and Eve isn't just about what happened. It's about what always happens. Because just like them, we regularly confuse what looks good with what is good. We're so easily deceived by appearances, aren't we? Like, we care way more about how we look than about what kind of person we're becoming. We are prone to judge others based on their appearance, rather than actually getting to know them. We often assume that bigger, nicer, and fancier means better, whether we're talking about a house or a job or a church. We tend to be drawn to leaders who are bold and impressive and charismatic, rather than people of integrity and compassion. It is so easy to confuse what looks good with what is good. because what looks good in our eyes isn't always what is good in God's eyes. And being faithful to God means trusting what he says is good rather than choosing what looks good or feels good to us. So what this story teaches us is that when it comes to the decisions we make, the relationships we have, the lives we lead, and the people we're becoming, there's really one ultimate question we should be asking. And that is this: which king will I choose? Now, here in the United States, we are a constitutional republic, so we don't have a king. We're not a monarchy. But in most countries with a monarchy, there's a law called the demise of the crown, which means that the very moment that a king or a queen dies, then the next person in line automatically takes the throne. So that's what happened in England a few years ago, for example, when Queen Elizabeth died on September 8th, 2022 at 3:10 in the afternoon. That exact second, her son, Prince Charles, instantly and automatically became the king. So there wasn't a single second where England was without a monarch. And the same thing's going to happen whenever King Charles dies. At that exact moment, Prince William will be the new king. So this is called the demise of the crown. The throne is never empty. Well, the truth is that there's always a king on the throne of your life too. And that throne is never empty. And as soon as the last king dies, then the next one takes its place. So again, the question is, which king will you choose? Will you follow what's right in your eyes, or will you trust and obey what's right in the eyes of the Lord? Now, I know it's summer, it's a holiday weekend, it's beautiful, we're outside, but I actually want to invite you to deal with God this morning. I think that's why we're here. I want you to seriously consider who is the king that sits on the throne of your life. When it comes to your beliefs, your relationships, your job, your marriage, your family, your body, your sexuality, your money, your time, your plans, your values, your politics, your attitudes, your convictions, your habits, your hobbies, your desires. Who is the king of your life? Who gets to call the shots? Who gets to decide what's good and bad, right and wrong, okay and not okay? That throne is never empty. Everyone has a king. The question is, which king will you choose? Now, the truth is, you don't have to choose God as your king. You're free to live however you want. You can keep choosing to do good in your own eyes instead of trusting what's good in God's eyes if that's what you want to do. But what you have to know is that the reason God told the first man and woman not to eat from that tree wasn't to deprive them of something good. It was to give them something way better. When God told them that if they ate of that tree, they would surely die, he wasn't threatening them. He was warning them. Like a parent who says, if you touch the stove, you're going to get burnt. If you eat of the tree, God says, if you choose a king other than me, you will surely die. But if that's what you want, you're free to choose. So you can choose any king you want. And what you'll find is that it will gladly take your life from you. But there's only one king who gave his life for you. And what's interesting is that while the king that the Israelites chose was tall and handsome, the king they needed didn't look nearly as impressive on the outside. In fact, what we're told about Jesus in Isaiah 53, he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. So unlike Saul, Jesus wasn't known for his impressive stature or his good looks. So if you want a king that looks good, go with Saul. But if you want a king that is good, Jesus is the king you need. So Antioch, instead of following a donkey herder who has no idea what he's doing, come and follow the good shepherd who knows each of his sheep by name and who lays down his life for his flock.